To the Motorcycles and Misfits at the Recycle Garage podcast. We've got a good group here again today. We've got me, Liza. We've got Moti.
Uh-huh.
John.
Yes.
Keith.
Hey.
Justin.
Yep.
And Zoe.
Hey, everybody.
This is the first time for Keith, so we're going to be prodding him a bit. He's a quiet one.
He likes to be prodded, though.
But probably one of the most knowledgeable. So, hey, one of the things I wanted to discuss today are eBay stories. So many of us buy our parts on eBays for our bikes. What's the last thing y'all bought on eBay for your bike? Okay, not everyone at once now.
You kind of bought it with Star of Solenoid for my bike, but...
Yeah. I bought some body work for the Buell recently.
Oh. This is really...
Oh,
you really need
a new windscreen. Hmm? I bought a windscreen.
You really need to have Jim here for that, because...
This week.
Well, he loves eBay.
Yeah.
I've been buying a lot of parts for Davey's bike. Carb boots I'm bidding on right now. I'm looking at carbs. The other thing people don't think about for eBay, like Megan emailed me. I said, hey, I'm looking for a new tank for the Ninja. What other bikes might this tank fit? Now, we all know it's probably just that one. But
yes.
I use eBay a lot as a resource to go and look up. I said, look at past completed sales and see what people list. Like, I was looking for carbs for Davey's bike, and somebody listed for the GS550 and the Katana. And it made me think, oh, can I look under the Katana for carbs? I know. So, I mean, I use it for research a lot of times.
I'm trying to think of what Katana...
There was Katana 600.
Yeah. It's really old, like, we're talking 70s carbs here, or well, early 80s carbs. I mean, they made a Katana 750 back in the early 80s, but... It's weird. Anyway, maybe they fit. Keep going.
So, what about, has anyone had any perils they've encountered on eBay?
Perils? I don't know. Well, I don't know about that. You definitely have to do your research and know what part you're getting, because half the time it seems like the people selling the stuff don't even know what the hell they're selling. You know? And you always have to kind of watch out for... I forget what the phrase is, but people that prop up the bidding try to boost up the price of an auction.
Sock puppets.
Yeah. I actually ran into that once on a motorcycle out of Canada. I had bid like $2,500 for this VTR 1000 Super Hawk, and this was like back in 2001 or 2002 or something like that. And... So the bike was still relatively new, and it had only had like 10,000 miles on it. But somebody had outbid me, and then like the next day, the woman who was auctioning off this bike sends me a message and says, "Hey, the person that won the auction backed out." I was like, "Yeah, right," you know. And she says, "I hate to sell it for $2,500, but if you want it at $2,500, I guess you can have it. But I'd really like to get more money if that's okay." Unfortunately, it kind of all hinged on me going up and picking it up and bringing it back, because I couldn't afford to ship it. You know, it was a great deal at $2,500. It's a kind of a crappy deal when you have to ship it back.
But eBay also has that built-in second chance offer the sellers can do too.
Right.
Which is kind of...
Right.
I always feel kind of weird when they're giving me those second chance emails. Cause it's like, okay, now it's like my highest possible bid.
Right.
I'd be paying suddenly.
Exactly. So, you know, it would have been a great deal if I could have gotten it, because for God's sakes, we all know that 80,000 mile VTR 1000 Super Hawks are going for $8,000, you know, which is $1,000 more than MSRP in this state for whatever reason. But, You know, I couldn't go and pick it up at that moment, so I just let it slide.
I wouldn't buy a motorcycle on eBay.
It depends. I wouldn't buy a new motorcycle. I wouldn't buy like a like a sport bike, but a vintage bike, something rare, sure, why not?
I would feel better going to one of the forum sites, because then you can check, you can investigate the seller.
Sure.
I mean, you can tell if this guy's an asshat or not. Because by and large, they've got, you know, 500 posts. And if you go scrolling through there and, you know, that doesn't know what he's talking about, then...
Right.
Except on eBay, there's more safeguards. Yeah. I can tell you, I bought bikes on eBay. I bought, when I lived in Georgia, I bought my K75RT in Texas. And I bought a one-way ticket to go pick it up. And the guy was totally nice. He offered to bring it to me at the airport so I could... And then his wife drove to take him back. He was totally cool. And then I took it from there. A little side note, this was a month after 9-1-1, 9-11. Mm-hmm. And I bought a one-way ticket.
Well,
carry-on so baggage.
How was that cavity search?
So, hold on. So, in my carry-on baggage was a pair of underwear, a pair of socks, and then boots, helmet, pants, and a jacket. Because that's all I could fit in my carry-on, right? And I figure I'm just hoe-bagging it the rest of the way, right?
Well, you are a hoe-bag.
Thank you. So, I get through the regular security, but this is before they had set up all the extra security. They literally just had a table... folding table set up at the gate, and they were picking people out of the line to go get in this other line, of which I was the only woman in this line with a bunch of middle-aged men. And I was at the end of the line, which took a long time to go through everyone's luggage. They had to hold the plane to wait for this security line. I get up there. Now, do you know how hard it is to put a helmet and boots and a jacket with all the padding into a duffel bag? It was meticulously crammed in there. They spring it open. It pops out. They go through. Can't find it.
Explode for that.
Yeah. Couldn't get it packed back in. The pilot's like, you guys are holding us up. Let's go. Let's go. They literally handed me my duffel bag with all of my gear in my arms and my underwear on top. I had to walk on the plane that had no more luggage available. It was like, are you kidding me? And everyone was giving me the stink eye for holding everything up. Anyway, that was a sidebar.
You were holding you.
That was a sidebar.
Yeah, when I was on my way to the trip. On a, it's not to follow up on that.
Sidebar.
Yeah, I'm following first class out of San Jose before Dallas.
Fancy.
Excuse me, Mr. Rockefeller.
Oh, it was beautiful, but that's another story.
No Atlantic Aviation G550. Slumming
it. I was slumming it. And
what's the matter with you, man?
So I sit down. You have this problem. You can't put this stuff in bags. So what I'd done is I'd worn my walking shoes, my regular shoes, my tennis shoes, through security, and then as soon as I got through security, flipped them off, shoved them in my bag, and I carried my boots, so I then put my boots on, and my jacket, like my riding jacket, and my helmet, because the helmet qualifies as a purse. So I put my bag in there, and I sit down, now I'm in first class, and it is business, you know, people who actually make real money, and I'm holding my helmet in my hand and a jacket, and the guy sits down next to me and says, do you know something I don't? Calmly looked him in the eye and said, yep.
And ignored him the rest of the flight. Beautiful.
Yeah.
So, I bought the K75RT, and I just thought, for the price of a plane ticket to go pick it up, I was going to get a little adventure.
Sure.
So I didn't really consider that. Rode home, and it was great.
The only thing that bothers me is you went from Texas to Atlanta, Georgia, and you didn't bring Coors with you.
I did want to take a second to explain to everyone what all that clinking sound is.
That's Keith fucking around.
Keith, who's first time of the podcast, who I think is just being shy and is very fascinated with his ring of keys.
No, I'm just trying to get this new keychain together.
Apparently.
Really?
You could have done that at your own leisure at home.
Or after.
I was when she called me with 6 minutes notice to tell me to be down here.
I just think it's nervous fidgeting.
Yes,
I'm exactly. almost done. I just need to get this on stage.
Yeah, I hope you're able to, man. We're all pulling for you over there.
It's not even a motorcycle key.
But I did also buy a GPZ 1100 on eBay. Again, when I was in Georgia. And this was in Florida, and I talked the guy into delivering it to me.
Nice.
Now, you'd be suspicious. Why would somebody be willing to spend a day to drive up to deliver it?
Because you're a cutie.
No, because when he got it to me and pulled it off, oh, the battery must be dead, but it runs great.
Oh.
This is the one I have pictures up here of, that one that's the green, the Kawasaki green with the red trim. And it was beautiful, beautiful. I suckered up $2,500. It never ran right. I tried the injectors, I tried the brain, I kept replacing parts. It would run on four cylinders, be bad ass fast, and then it'd go down to two cylinders and just would be limping down the street.
Yeah, there's a reason why they didn't have fuel injection on motorcycles for a long, long time. And that's a real early kind of version of a modern fuel injected bike.
Keith, would you buy a bike on eBay?
I have bought bikes on eBay.
Oh, what have you bought?
I bought a 64 Superhawk at one point.
Really?
And cool. I bought a few engines on eBay, a couple of CN250 engines, a C110 Super Cub engine.
Did you have them delivered or did you pick them up?
Delivered.
Sorry, that was the sound of Keith staring deeply into space.
Keith thinking.
Yeah.
All of those were delivered. I've bought bikes on the phone and picked them up, but so all my eBays were delivery.
When you had them delivered,
and one of the eBays was actually purchased from me at Pergolesi's before it got delivered, because apparently I outbid a friend of Heidi Curdo's, and since she knew me, he contacted me through her and was like, "Will you just sell it to me?" So.
And.
That was a Superhawk.
Nice.
Like, how much were you paying for engines? Was it... Because it costs more to ship it, usually.
Usually, like... Well, CN250 engines were, like, probably, like, $75 to ship. Yeah. Like, they're not... It's not a lot of engine. Even with the swing arm included, it's not a lot of engine.
When I, again, was in Georgia, my CB750 Super Sport blew the engine up. Went on eBay, I bid on one, and I won it for $50. Shipping $200. I thought, still I'm good. Month later, still hasn't arrived. I'm contacting them. It turns out, as I do more research, the person who sold it to me sells Beanie Babies and trinkets on eBay and let her son use her account to sell an engine, of which never arrived. But I forget, I had somebody who, I think I had somebody who like worked at the phone company or somebody was able to get like this person's phone number and address for me. Oh, somebody who's more savvy on the internet than I was able to figure it out. And it turns out this person was in Concord, California. And I called him up and said, "Hey, I won that auction in Georgia, just totally just playing off. Hey, I just found out you're in Concord. Well, guess what? I grew up out there and I have a lot of family there. A lot of my cousins live there. Can I summon over to pick it up right now?" Click. Right? So now I'm like, okay, I know exactly where he is. I have his address. I was like, should I call people and just, I wanted to send him over there. Then I went the smart route, just went through eBay and they refunded me for it. But I remember I was so...
And then you burnt his house down?
Well, I was really pissed off that this guy just took the money, $250, and wouldn't have anything to do with me.
Of course, my first internet scam.
Well, I have a feeling that he had no idea how to crate or ship the engine and realized this was a much bigger task.
Well, it should have been okay when you offered to come pick it up. I mean...
Yeah, but it was weird. But
then he sold it to someone else.
Then he should have obviously offered to refund your money.
I know. But I did end up getting another one. No, he never refunded it, but eBay did. They had that because I used my credit card. Or my credit card company did it.
And then they probably went after him.
Yeah. But, so, I mean...
Or his Beanie Baby loving mom.
Yeah.
Which she deserves to be.
Well, we all know how collectible and valuable Beanie Babies
are. Rare. Super rare.
Well,
more than the engine.
So you guys, have you bought something big like that? Engines? I mean, it used to be really the only place to go to find this stuff.
No, not really.
Really?
Nope.
He's about to sell an engine on eBay.
No.
Well, because it came up, now we have Craigslist.
Yeah, I bought two motorcycles off of Craigslist.
Mm-hmm. I've bought an awful lot of stuff off Craigslist.
Engines, parts.
Sure.
No.
Just bikes. Motorcycles, motorcycle parts.
Yeah.
Hooker.
I'll buy like patio furniture off Craigslist, but other than that, I avoid Craigslist. I just assume everything on Craigslist is just as stolen as everything down at the flea market.
That's a safe assumption.
Probably true. Yeah. It's probably not far off.
Especially like, if I have something stolen, then maybe I look at Craigslist.
I've heard of people doing that, like, and getting their stuff
and
back.
And stealing it back. Totally. They're like, can I take it for a test ride? And they're like, sure. And they're like, and bye. Yeah, just...
Don't worry, I've got a key.
Yeah.
I bought my first bike off of Craigslist.
So did I.
An R65, BMW R65. Old enough to go drinking with me.
Well, I mean, the bottom line is, it still is a great tool. I think we all use it all the time for parts. It's still... I can't believe for a website, it's... been really the only source. A lot have come and gone. Do you remember the Yahoo auctions they had for a while there?
What's Yahoo?
How does Yahoo make money at all? How are they a company that is in business in America?
Well, Bing actually is kind of run through Yahoo. Like, Microsoft has a deal with Yahoo for Bing, and most of Yahoo's owned by the company that runs...
Who here uses Bing?
No one is
hands. Show of hands.
I'm trying to think of the big Asian conglomerate that owns like 40% of Yahoo. Every time you look for like fasteners and stuff online, they find.
That's true.
But anyway, I can't remember the name of the company.
But back on topic, I think eBay is a great source for motorcycle parts, rare motorcycle parts. You've got a freaking 72 XYZ. You know, where the hell are you going to get a freaking gas tank or anything for that bike? eBay's got it.
Though I have to say, though, I am more suspicious now of gas tanks because a couple times now I've bought them on eBay and they come rusted out.
Yeah, they're all rusted out, every one of them. I've bought a lot more things like clothes, jackets, boots off of eBay.
Oh, vintage stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
It is way cool.
I actually got a great pair of vintage motocross boots that had, like, never been worn. They were 38 years old, and they'd never been worn.
But, yeah, I agree. As a resource for us, and especially with our old bikes, there's so many bikes that wouldn't be running without it.
Sure.
John, didn't I buy those for you, and then we had problems with the seller, though?
Did we have problems with the seller? What was the problems with the seller?
I don't remember. I just remember there was a... big load of problems.
There was.
Because I paid for the boots and then it took you like 2 months to get them.
That's right. But that was all your problem because you had to deal with the selling. I went about my business drinking beer and giggling. Yeah, that was weird. But I did get them and I literally was the first person that ever buckled the buckles.
So I want to talk about tools because that's a lot of what we are here in the shop.
Yeah.
Because Keith's here.
So I always tell people I don't really teach people how to fix bikes so much as I teach people how to use tools and let them figure it out from there.
Which is why I've broken so many bolts.
Yeah. Because you never taught Zoe how to use a torque wrench.
Yeah.
Finally did, and I haven't broken one since.
That's true. So I want to know from people, what are some of your favorite tools?
Well... one of my little favorite tools that I found one day is a Motion Pro brand brake bleeder. And it's just this tiny little one-way valve. You put a hose on it to bleed your brakes, and you put the other end of the hose in a container for the fluid. You pump it up to the valve, and then you just pump the brake and pour fluid into the reservoir. It works like a charm, and it was like $8. The first time I used it, I got on my motorcycle, rode it to the place I bought it from, bought every one of them that they had on the rack, went to another motorcycle shop, bought every one of them they had on the rack, and I was just giving them out to my friends. I went to a couple different places. I probably gave out 8 or 9 of those things because I liked it that much.
You're right. I discovered it. I loved it too.
No, that's a different version.
But it's
how's it different?
Well, that's just, it's just different. It's, mine's just a little valve that you put in the hose. This is like a combination wrench and valve, and this one, from what I remember, leaks.
Oh, geez. Does not. Anyway, yeah, I agree. Yeah, that's a pretty cool tool.
I have that toolkit that I consistently am loaning people tools out of.
Yeah. You keep it on your bike?
Stays. Which is really handy. Yeah, it is.
It's the size of a food log, so like a super burrito. And it has, when the guys who made it put it together, they get the bike that's four, and they take the bike apart down to the cases, and every time they need a tool, they put it over the side. And those are the tools that go in the kit. It's Adventure Designs, and they're in the East Bay.
Hmm.
And
nice.
How do you reach them?
Adventure Designs. Google it.
.com.
So Adventure Designs, if you're listening to us, somebody obviously likes your stuff.
Yes. Oh, and Motion Pro. Dude, I love Motion Pro. Yeah. I think Motion Pro comes out with the coolest.
They make for about $150, $200. Their Super Kit, which is about the size of two Super Burritos, but that has every tool that you could need. It has AdventureDesigns.com.
ADVDesigns.com.
ADVDesigns.com. Somebody's deciding to Google.
Thank you, Keith.
Yeah. Someone Yahooed them.
Oh,
we used Bing. We Binged them.
But ultimately, the absolute best, if you're broken down, tool out there is a wad about this big of 20s.
Yeah, credit cards. Credit card.
You know what? Because the thing is, not everybody will take a credit card. But I have never been anywhere in the world
where a
U.S. $20 bill did not get instant positive attention.
I agree. I wanted to say some of my favorite tools are stick and pipe.
I love stick and pipe.
They are mainstays around the shop.
They're very basic.
Hammer
very
and
fun.
Chisel.
Stick and pipe. Stick is just a 1x2, about 3 feet long. I use it for pushing engines into frames because it's not going to mess up the metal. Anytime you need to just use it to leverage something, you want to use that wood against the metal. We use stick all the time. And then pipe when you need. I bend bars back with it. Stick it on the end of your ratchet to get more leverage.
That's also a reason why I've been called Magilla. I think I've broken a couple bolts that way.
Let's see.
Great.
You know, I don't know why more people don't have these auxiliary tanks.
Oh yeah, those are handy.
Those
are handy.
They're not that expensive.
For people who haven't seen it, it just basically looks like an IV bag.
Yeah. For bikes, but we use it all the time when you need to have your tank off and working on a bike.
And a jump starter.
Walls work good when you want to adjust your steering head angle.
Yeah.
Repeatedly accelerate right into them.
Or sit there and just smash it against the wall. Loosen it.
No, I use the 4x4 post out there for aligning my front end. I just whack it.
Yeah. You're all gorillas.
No, those are good tools.
How many of your bikes are running right now?
Ooh.
Yeah.
That was a low blow. Accurate.
One.
Two.
You have a two-stroke.
Two.
Yeah. No.
The one without a kickstarter attached to it does not count as running.
You can bump start that.
You did, didn't you?
And you don't really have it right now. Jim has it.
And it's not even street legal.
So? Does that count? What does that matter?
Yeah. All right. We'll save picking on John for when he really deserves it.
All the time.
I know. Something I love are my ball tip Allens.
Yep.
Yeah, totally.
I have a set of them in the back.
A lot of people don't realize you get the ball tip and you come in from an off angle.
Sure.
Makes it so much better.
Safety wire.
Safety wire?
Just safety wire. And a pair of pliers is nice, but safety wire
is nice.
Yeah, those ones that...
But the safety wire. It's one of the things in the bag, you have to have duct tape, gaffer tape or Gorilla tape, because the cloth variety holds better than the plastic classical duct tape. Safety wire, a razor blade,
For
scraping things,
cutting things.
Can't you just use your teeth?
Stabbing fools.
Well, I found that if you use like a knife, you end up destroying your nice knife.
Keith, what are some of your favorite tools? Have you found any upgrades that were really worth it?
I tend to buy nice tools off the bat, but how about bike stands? Pitbull bike stands. Oh, once yeah. I finally actually started buying Pitbull bike stands to fit everything, changed my life.
Oh,
I
you
do
mean
love my head those my things? Head pivot stand. Mm-hmm. It actually lifts the bike up from the frame and not from the forks.
Right, so under the steering head bearings.
Yeah, so you can take off the forks and do all kinds of stuff.
I mean, you don't just push it up on the bash plate?
No hanging from rafters.
My sport bike doesn't
well, Steelers, that's why this rafter was replaced, because when I took the front end off of my Ducati and I strapped it up to the rafter and the rafter started breaking with the Ducati hanging, and I had to shove 2x4s in there to support it.
Yeah, everybody says, "Oh no, you're just fucking tied up to the ceiling." No.
No.
Just buy a stand, you jackal. They're like $100.
You get pins to fit everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good to go.
Yeah, somebody donated one. I have to get all the different pins for it now.
Yeah, that's right. You do need to have a different pin for every bike. Actually, they really only make like 6
pins. Do they sell a set where you can just buy, you know, like...
No,
like
they make you buy them individually. But I think they only make 6 different ones. At least for my Pitbull, I think it's only like 6.
How about this? I want to get your guys' opinion on this. For somebody who's just starting a tool set, do you recommend buying just a few really nice, like a Snap-on tools, or buying one of those like cheap Harbor Freight 120 piece big tool kits?
I wouldn't go that far. I would go in the middle and go for like a Craftsman set of ratchets and box wrenches, few screwdrivers, and you're good to go. If you're gonna buy certain tools, should be expensive. Torque wrenches, you should buy the best one you can. You know, because a shitty torque wrench is a shitty, shitty deal.
It's a good way to break something.
Yeah, it's a good way to fuck yourself. You know, other than that, for the weekend mechanic, dude, you can't really go wrong with Craftsman stuff.
You know, the ADV Designs kits, and they make them, they don't make them for every bike out there, but they make them for all the adventure bikes. Mm. There's a KLR bike. I'm sure the KLR one has like 2 tools in it, but
sure.
How much are they?
One of them is a butter knife.
Well, check.
Keith, are you looking at that?
Keith is going to look it up.
Can you see how much they go for?
But the advantage of that is it is bike specific, meaning that when BMW went to Starheads, to Torques,
mm-hmm.
right? The rest of the world does not have Torques laying around, which was an issue. Like, you have to carry your own set of Torques.
Right.
Hey, at least it isn't Whitworth.
Fair enough. of the tools I've carried with me on long trips, I always have a pair of vice grips. I have a pair of, like, Leatherman vice grips. But vice grips can place all sorts of broken stuff. Like, brake levers. Or...
Right.
You can replace broken things on your bike with the... Now, it won't be beautiful.
Right, or a shifter.
But I have yet to be successful with JB Welding a shifter brake lever on.
JB Weld is a scam. I'm sorry.
I don't understand.
It doesn't work for anything. The only thing I've successfully JB Welded was the cap to the fucking tube.
JB Weld.
You know, but as far as buying tools for your motorcycle, if you buy like a basic little couple hand tools, as you start to get better or more experienced and you tackle different projects, then you just kind of buy tools to go along with what you need.
And you should always
before you know it, you kind of shit.
You should always buy like 3 10mm socket heads, though.
Right. Okay, but then once you've established, you've got the basics, you've got your wrenches and your sockets and your screwdrivers, now let's talk about the cool tools. Those little things that rarely get used and are really expensive, cool, you're proud to buy.
I love my Racetech cartridge fork compressor.
Oh, you have one of those?
I do. It's awesome.
Why isn't it here?
Because it's mine and you can't use it.
So you really need to... pause this segment and wait till you get Jim down here again.
I've used it twice
because
it was awesome both times.
He has the tool I don't know what it is, but whatever you're doing, he has that tool.
I just bought a case splitter.
Yeah, so...
Because I got sick and tired of beating on fucking engines with a mallet to try to get them to come apart. That's a retarded way to do it.
He has a thing that will that you you plug into your... to balance three carbs instead of...
Yeah.
He has... I am not a mechanic. I'm not any good at it. But the number of times where he said, oh no, you just need this tool. And brings out some strange thing that does exactly what you wanted it to do. Mm-hmm. You need a left-handed spanner wrench. What? Well, doesn't everybody have one?
So it's like the French have a word for it in general as a tool.
So I'm not finding these Adventure Rider toolkits. ADVWriter.com is actually the forum.
Yes, it is.
All right.
I got it.
You look that up. Keith, what tool do you want that you don't have? Yeah. You laugh it up, as well.
I have poor impulse control, like, when it comes to purchases. I don't...
I know. I want to hear what cool tools you have.
I just have the standard stuff. I like paying mechanics. I own a BMW. That all ultimately means I will be miserable. I am guaranteeing myself to misery the minute I take a wrench to that bike.
Yep.
I understand. I changed the battery on my RT once. You have to disassemble 3/4 of that bike.
Yeah.
Oh, try changing the regulator rectifier. We'll just have to take the hydraulic system for the brakes out. To get to the regulator rectifier.
I don't understand how anybody buys more than one BMW.
I remember
the first one less than enough.
I've had no issues with the 800.
That's because you bought an Austrian BMW, not a German BMW.
Well, the fact that it's a Rotax engine, but...
With a chain drive.
With a chain drive.
Yeah.
But 230 for the BMW toolkit.
Oh, okay.
It's not too bad.
Adrian's Husqvarna is more of a BMW than your bike.
So when I changed the brake pads on my RT one time, and I couldn't figure out how to get the caliper off the rotor because it hit the rim. It's like it wouldn't clear. So I thought, well, I need to just separate the caliper in half.
Oh, wow.
Right? To do it, I got it off, replaced it, and when I'm going to put it together, there's an O-ring that goes in the middle where the fluid crosses over. Uh-huh. I lost it somewhere, couldn't find it. So I went to the BMW dealership to order that O-ring. They don't have it. They told me to call Brembo in Italy to see if I can get the O-ring.
Yeah.
I'm like, are you kidding me? I couldn't find an O-ring for you know my what? Calipers.
This is a good tool, a McMaster car catalog.
There you go. Well,
that's my favorite tool when it comes to stuff like that.
What I ended up doing is forget going to like a Kragen or a big brand name thing. I went to our little downtown local automotive store. I told him my problem. He went through O-rings for air conditioning systems on like Fords and found one the exact same size. I bought two. One went in a cup of brake fluid. The other one went in the master cylinder. And I sat it for a year and checked it every now and then.
How's my wing doing? Hello, wing.
But, power to the little local shop because no one else could figure it out. Call Brembo in Italy? What? Or an O-ring? I don't know. But yeah, so I understand. Taking apart the BMW is...
Well, that's one of the reasons why GSs are so popular is that there isn't a lot of things you can... that you don't have all the plastics on them.
650 GSs. Well, and 800 GSs.
No, the 1150 doesn't have a whole lot of plastics on it.
Well,
let's get into the 1200s.
Let me ask you this. Aside from the one you bought, have any of you actually used the toolkit that comes with your bike?
Sure.
Yeah.
And you found them to be good tools?
The R65 had a complete OEM toolkit. That was beautiful.
BMW again.
I keep threatening to go through the toolkit on my motorcycles and get good versions of each tool, but I've never done it.
Like the crappiest screwdriver, the crappiest wrench.
But I've used them all, and I've torn bikes down pretty far with the toolkit, like on the side of the road. I did add a tool to a toolkit once. I had... it was at the Grand Prix Motorcycle Races at Laguna Seca Raceway in California. And the people we were staying with were having their wedding anniversary. So I thought it would be a great idea to get them an anniversary cake. So I went to the grocery store. And I got a cake for them for their anniversary. And I put it on the back of my motorcycle. And I happen to have a very, very fast motorcycle. And I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get them the fastest cake that I can get them. So I decided to go as fast as I could with the cake on the bike with the roads that I had available. And the one road I knew that I could haul ass on that no one would be on for Grand Prix weekend is this road out in the middle of nowhere, a couple miles from the racetrack. And I went on that road at night and I got up to about 155, 160, and the bike just died. Son of a motherfucker, just died, wouldn't start. I had power, just wouldn't start, and I'm stuck out in the middle of nowhere. For however long I was going for 150 to get up to 160, that's how far away I was from the nearest road, which was still a couple miles from civilization. I ended up stuck out there. I had to call. I managed to get a hold of somebody that would come and pick me up, take me into town, so I could get a truck and come back and pick up the bike because I couldn't for the life of me figure out what the hell was wrong. It was flashing an error code though on the screen, and with some research, it turned out that if I stuck a paperclip inside this electrical socket, it would tell me what the error code was. So what I did was I put a paperclip in my toolkit with a little tiny printout of what all the error codes were and what they meant, and I put it in a little plastic bag and put it in the toolkit. And as far as I know, it's still in that toolkit to whomever owns that bike to this day.
And what bike is that requires a paperclip?
Suzuki's, at least from the early 2000s, probably still to this day. If you put a little paperclip jumper in there, it'll...
I think my friend's VFR needs it, too.
Yeah, it'll tell you what the error code is on the screen.
I have a...
You can also adjust your throttle position sensor with one.
I have a fault code reader that plugs into the diagnostic system of the bike, and then Bluetooth connects to my phone. My God, I'm a BMW owner.
It's like, that's... both geeky and motorcycles. Like,
but no, the thing is, you can't. If you have the GS911 tool, you cannot access your air codes. You don't know what's wrong with the bike. And it's really non-communicative. It gives you the little warning light comes on, and it doesn't start. The computer tells you, sorry.
Just a side note, 160-mile-hour cakes aren't attractive. But
yeah, I was going to say.
That cake was beat to hell by the time I got it back to
another tool I know that I think is a good addition to keep on the bike are the plugs and the CO2 cartridges for refilling your tires. I think that's a really smart tool to have with you. I mean, does that count as a tool, right?
Yeah, totally.
And what's that other version of the tire plug kit we all started
carrying? Oh, it's like a mushroom? The mushroom plug thing?
Plugs are so much better than the old style push throughs.
Yeah, they're pretty good. And usually when we go on long motorcycle trips, at least with the friends that go on long motorcycle trips with me, at least somebody has one of those mushroom kits. And they make this tiny little, it's like 4 inches by 4 inches by 2 inches square. It plugs right into your motorcycle battery, and it's a air compressor.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's a handy little thing. It's made by Slime.
Yep, I got one.
Makes that. The people that make that makes the green shit that will never, ever keep air from leaking out of your tire.
It's totally. I've never had any effective. I used it in quantities that were
the only thing. The only thing it works for is pissing off the guy that replaces your tire.
Yep.
But their little air compressor is awesome.
Yep.
Well, cool. Any last tools you want to add before we wrap this up? Hi, Josie. Thanks for joining us.
That's the cat.
That sounds like that's a no. So I want to go to... this is the one I was looking forward to. So, especially with Keith here, too. Both Keith and John are members of the Vampires Motorcycle Club here. And you guys host rides a couple times a year. And every time.
Only a couple?
Few times.
There's at least one per month that you can probably go to.
Few times a year. And every time there's stories that come out of it, just crazy stuff happens. So I want to hear what stories you guys have of shit that's gone down on rides.
Before they go into this, I need to make sure that we understand this is all fiction. We wouldn't actually do anything that we might describe in the next
few
minutes.
There was this one time we had an event where people showed up and the ride left on time and everyone had a good time.
Oh, this was a dream?
And nobody ran out of gas and everybody had a good time. They left and they went home and nobody got hurt.
Where does a good time come in?
That happened once.
I still don't believe you left on time.
Yeah. The more valuable input on these rides would be from you guys who have gone as guests rather than...
Well, I think she's looking for stories because we've gone to more of them.
We might as well talk about your the photo op.
You got a story. Justin has a story.
So I have upon occasion written articles for a not publication called examiner.com, not to be confused with anything with journalistic standards. So I want to get photos. For a while, and I think still, usually I'll write up something and post it on whatever ride I just went on. So I want to get photos, but I want to get good photos of the ride going by. So John knows the route. This was the weekend I was on bike number 4. I had killed 4 motorcycles at this point. And so we were going to go railing up in front, get way up there, and then I can have I'll be stationary and be able to take shots as people ride by. So we go, moving.
And we found this really good
spot. Had a little wide
turn coming in, and a turn leaving, and a nice little straightaway. We get people coming and going and leaning. It was a great spot to take pictures of motorcycles.
And we're sitting there thinking, we thought we were moving pretty good.
Oh, and we're patting each other on the back, too. Oh, this is a great spot.
Oh, yeah.
This is a great spot.
And we had lots of time to set up. Normally these things are people are moving pretty quick, so you had to get jump off, rip your glove off, take your picture, and maybe you get something. And the ride doesn't show up.
What the fuck's going on?
And it doesn't show up. Now, these things are moving about 40 miles an hour. If you think about this pack, it's moving at 40 miles an hour, which means...
I wanted to explain real quick, because there's a completely different riding method than, say, when I was back east riding with Harley groups. In those groups, you stay together. The way we ride here, you just go at your pace and we meet at junctions.
Well, usually what happens is we split people up according to their riding ability, riding style, or motorcycle. And we put them in a group that roughly they'll be doing about this pace. This group will be doing a faster pace. This group will be doing a faster pace. So we kind of split people up and then meet them all together. It's so that people don't get lost as easy and that people kind of feel comfortable with the pace that they're doing. So you've got people, faster people that would be bored, or slower people that would be scared. We try to split them up.
It's a very nice happy medium.
Anyway, back to this story, though.
After 5-6 minutes of this, we're like, John looks at me and says,
fuck, they turned off the road like 3 or 4 turns back. They're not coming this way. They made a left past where we should have stopped.
So we now have to catch up.
Now we got to catch them.
Now you're on your seat.
I was on my Motard.
You're on your Motard, and I am on a KLR. I am on the KLR that has traveled over South America with me. It has 35 ponies.
That's okay.
And
he gets on it. Probably got 40.
And starts to check out, and I'm like, no. It was the most blurry tour of the back roads of Santa Cruz County that I've ever been on. As I just focused on that taillight and staying on the gas, being the getting off the gas the last and getting right back on it as soon as you could.
I couldn't believe you were behind me. I could not fucking believe it. I was giggling in my helmet every time I looked in the rearview mirror and Justin's behind me. I'm like, yeah, hey, I can't believe he's there. Oh, this retard's gonna die. Woo! This is gonna be great. Right on, Justin, you made that turn. Cool. And I'm just gassing the piss out of him. We were cooking.
That was a lot of fun.
That was a blurry
trip. And we caught up with the pack.
We did. And it didn't take us too long, considering how far back we were.
Yeah.
Well, the first ride I ever did with the vampires was before I lived here. I don't know if you knew this. Well, it was actually the Furies hosted ride that all the vampires went on.
So you went on the Furies ride.
But that's when I met all the vampires for the first time. And I was visiting out here, but I had bought, again, on eBay, a GB500 and had it delivered to my parents' house. So I flew out here and it was waiting for me. Hadn't ever ridden the bike, nothing. Get here, get on the bike, go meet everyone for the first time, and we go on this ride. So I'm put in a group with Barrett and three guys on sport bikes.
That's kind of a bad person to follow. Yeah, he
is. Now, I've been riding back east either by myself on old KZs and CBs or on my Roadstar with a bunch of Harley riders. This was the first real, like, sport riding I'd ever done with people. Barrett, on his Triumph, takes off, splitting lanes on 17, never split lanes before. Taking goat trails. He was going way too fast, passing cars left and right. And I'm on this little GV500 just trying to keep up and not lose anyone because I don't know where I am, where we're going. I managed to be faster than two guys on sport bikes because they're newer riders. And I'm feeling okay because I'm in the middle pack, but I definitely was way past my comfort zone and into the oh shit zone. But let me tell you, GB500 can flick in all those uh-oh moments.
Yeah, it's essentially an XR.
It did good. Well,
the cafe kit.
We ended up at some campground up in the hills, and everyone's going to be staying overnight. Well, I'm not planning on staying. I have no idea where I am in the Santa Cruz Mountains. I still couldn't tell you where it was. And I said, hey, it's getting dark. I need to get back to town. Is anyone going to town? And this one guy on a Ducati that looked like it had a chainsaw taken to it raises his hand.
It was probably a chain link fence that got it.
That was Mike.
Mike?
And he says, yeah, I'm going in. You can follow me. Now, he takes off, and I don't know if he forgot about me or what, but I'm pushing this bike so hard in these turns, trying to keep up because I don't know where he is. And he finally just gets so far in front of me, I just can't keep up. It's like it's risk my life or just be lost.
Well, you don't want to be lost.
Yeah. I got lost.
There's a caveat that should be said here, which is that on all these rides, the last thing they say before we actually get started half an hour late is ride your own ride. And it's not that anybody who rides is a little competitive. Right. No one in this room has ever decided that they just can't stand to see that red light in front of them. And they have to pass it. And you do need to ride your ride when you're on these things.
He may have been waiting at the next junction. I don't know. I just took the water theory. I'll just keep heading downhill every opportunity.
Well, that's actually what, I mean, if I've got people behind me, between intersections, I don't care what you're doing. I'll see you at the intersection. Or if you're out there in front of me, I'll meet you at the intersection. It's my ride. I'm not going to mess with it. However, nobody, you know, it's not that anybody gets in over their head because they decide that they're going to prove something. A lot.
How about you, Keith? You got any fun stories from a ride?
Not offhand. I have a cat. I'm good.
Yeah, Keith is pretty content with Josie right there.
Although my cats are going to be pissed when I get home.
My favorite Moik story, actually.
That's turning into a Moik story.
Is when we went to the back entrance of a local high school and climbed the steps into their courtyard, which was above. We took a group ride up the steps into their courtyard. It was about two flights worth of steps, probably. And one person who will not be named James Pennick, high-centered his motorcycle on top of the steps, blocking the group behind him. Me and the couple people that climbed the steps before James rode up onto this little amphitheater stage and kind of jumping off the stage and stuff like that, fucking around. Well, in the meantime, Moik, who was leading the ride, didn't realize that any of this had happened. And he came rolling out of the back of the school just in time to be seen by the local constabulary. Oh. So he sees this and figures there are any number of 50, 60 people behind him. He decides to take the fuck off and draw this police officer away from the group.
Right. This is where we should mention this was in Barcelona.
Yes, this was in it was the Barcelona Police Department. He went and just took off and drew him completely the opposite way of where we were supposed to be going. So he leaves, disappears. I've got me and a couple other people. I don't know where we're going. No one else knows where we're going. We got a ton of bikes stuck on stairs, and we pull out into the street and we're like, there's no ride leader. What the hell's going on here? So we kind of wait and twiddle our thumbs and wait for everybody to get up the stairs and wait for everybody to get stuck and wait for everybody to get unstuck. There's like four or five people that got stuck. And by the time everybody finally made it up the stairs and into the street, here comes Mike. Cruising down the street going, all right, I lost the cop. He's like somewhere on the west side right now. Fuck around. Let's go east.
So I want to know who was on. Were you on the naked ride that got pulled over?
Yes.
Yeah.
I want to hear that story. And you can start with the temperature.
I think it was somewhere around 41, 42 degrees that year.
It was. And,
the memorable
was
moment.
Was it rainy?
No.
It was not raining at that time.
So it was
I think it was the year before it rained.
And you have to know, I wasn't on the ride, but I was driving somewhere and passed them on the bridge and looked at the thermometer on my car. So that's how I knew, and I knew something was up.
Yeah, and I was in the back of the pack, running in the back.
I was blocking.
Do you want to explain what the naked ride is and when it is?
Well, whenever we actually decide to organize it. Usually during the holiday season when it's nice and cold.
It's old. The dead of winter.
December, yes. January.
January, February, whenever's cold.
It's an evening ride. It's what it sounds like. Helmet, boots, gloves, that's it.
It's polar bear swim for motorcycles.
Yeah, we get naked, we go on a ride, we end at hot tubs.
And it's a good time.
That's that. That's a naked ride. Which is actually perfectly legal here in Santa Cruz as long as it's not being lewd or
lascivious.
The word I can't
say. Which does have to do with
freaking English.
Which does have to do with this story.
Yes. So we get up to one intersection probably about 10 minutes into the ride after going through downtown Pacific Avenue, looping around Ocean Street. Turn left onto
water. We're at the intersection of the
SoCal water and river.
No, SoCal and water. I thought this was Barcelona. I'm sorry, ocean. It was ocean and water.
No, this one is legal.
River. No, it was ocean.
It was ocean and water because I've seen the video.
It was ocean and water because
it was water.
It was ocean and water because I was blocking traffic.
But no, we turned left off of ocean onto water.
Right.
And then
right.
It was at the River Street intersection. We all stopped at the left-hand turn lane.
That's when he got people to stop.
Yes.
Caught us and tried to pull us over at ocean and water.
Yeah, and everybody just ignored him and kept on going.
Well, I took the fuck off.
But,
later! But
the group stopped at the next light to turn left, waiting for traffic. And the cop comes up behind me, I'm in the back, and starts running bike to bike, taking our keys. And then half the light turns green, so half the group that's towards the front starts taking off. And this cop is running after them down the street, trying to think he was going to catch up with them on foot or something. And actually, I shouldn't say cop. We actually have a great police department here in Santa Cruz. It was a California Highway Patrol officer. And this is a very important part of the story because it was not a local police officer.
So he gets back and he's flustered, little 4'2" guy or something like that. And he's like visibly shaking. What's going on, officer? You guys know what's going on? No. Why'd you pull us over? I'm not going to talk to you. What do you mean you're not? Why do you pull us? We're not doing anything wrong.
So I'm free to go then?
You know what we're doing. You're doing wrong.
Wait.
And he had our keys.
So
we were definitely being detained. He had our keys. We weren't going anywhere.
Didn't he make y'all sit on the sidewalk?
No. We were actually sitting on our bikes naked in 40-degree weather in traffic, which is kind of frustrating.
Awesome. Yeah.
He was not even parked behind us. He parked his patrol car up right alongside us. So while we're sitting on our bikes with no lights, in the dark and cold, naked with no motorcycle gear, I'm waiting for a car to come up behind us to make a left-hand turn and pile through the whole group. Luckily, that did not happen.
That might have made the news, though.
The officer just waited.
Group of 20 motorcyclists were injured last night. They were plowed into by an SUV.
The California Highway Patrol officer just made us wait for the local police department to show up about 10 minutes later. Well, he frustratingly told the police officer, got these guys pulled over or whatever, and the police officer is like, what did they do?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, they're naked. Did they break any traffic laws? No. So they were only naked? Yes. Let them go. Because it's perfectly legal in Santa Cruz.
You've got a group of naked people on the side of the street right now. Get them the hell out of here.
And there's a generally, in the video, there's two things that show up in the video. One is the rider who clearly has been messed with before, because I see him go, he pulls the key, and as soon as he walks by, she reaches down and comes up with another key, puts in the ignition, and rides off.
Ah! That was Charlotte, wasn't it?
Yes.
So apparently someone had, and I went, and.
And you can see, you can actually go on YouTube and Charlotte's do Vampire's cool. Naked Ride, and there are videos that come up.
There's a couple,
yeah.
The good one is the one by the theater where the group goes by and then a cop drives by. Like after the last person, the cop kind of rolls up, checks out this girl, naked girl, and then shakes his head and drives away. That's a good one.
My favorite naked ride was actually when Zach was late. So he just ran down to Pacific Avenue, stripped naked on Pacific Avenue, and hitchhiked the naked ride. Put his thumb out when he was riding by. I forget who actually picked his hairy ass up, but they were a braver person than I.
Yeah, well, I look forward to all the rides, and we have another ride coming up soon with the Mystery Meat Barbecue. Who's in charge of meat this year?
That's not the next event.
The next one's Pirate Mutiny.
Oh, yeah. Well,
San Francisco.
What does that consist of? Like, is there a theme to it? Or
yeah.
Yar?
Pirates. It's a mutiny.
Just put pirate hats on our helmets, or what?
You could do that if you'd like.
Okay.
They've actually run it a few different ways. I don't know what they're going to do this year. Some years it's been scavenger hunts.
Oh, wow.
Some years
it's just been a hoodlum.
We kidnapped a bride on her wedding day during the pirate mutiny a couple years ago.
Okay, well, this sounds like a bride.
I kidnapped a bride on her wedding day on the pirate ride. At the very first pirate ride.
So my first hooligan ride, I had been back from South America for, like, months. And they take off, and they, you know, it's a lot of fun. It's downtown. And so somebody, as they go over the footbridge, stalls. Cindy stalls.
Where what city is this?
Not in the state.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Barcelona.
Because, right? And so she stalls on the footbridge, and the pack takes off, and it takes her a little bit to get it pushed around and get down the other side, and there's no patches. As far as I can see, there is nobody wearing a patch. Like, and it was before I learned to eavesdrop on what the route was going to be beforehand. And a police officer, a Barcelona police officer, had just pulled by the footbridge. And I know that takes about, I've got about 30 seconds before he can make it around to where we've come out. And I look around, and people are, I'm like, yeah, screw this. And I hit it, and I embrace my inner Colombian, because the toughest riding I ever did was in Colombia. And I am railing it. I'm doing everything that you're supposed to do on one of these. I've got my pillion on the back. I'm on the old Funduro, and I just slamming that bike around all over the place. I don't know where we're going. I'm just picking random turns, and so apparently further back there, there's Sarah and I think Lonnie are way back there, and they're like, "This isn't the route. Where's so-and-so taking us? Why is he not following the route?" it's one turn and another. And I just keep on the gas, right? Just keep on the gas. And as long as people behind you, someone else can get caught. And we're coming down this long straight because Barcelona has a really nice place near the beach with roller coasters. And the long straight, and I'm on it, and I hear the sport bikes come around the corner, and then a downshift and a whole lot of gas, as apparently they've come around the corner and they went, "Justin's in front. There's nobody in front of him. What? How did he get here?" And just blasted by me, and I was like, "Well, I don't know what I'm doing." The moral of the story is, if you just keep going, people will follow you. You can have an entire ride just follow you for no better reason than you just kept moving.
That's true.
I wanted to close this out with, actually, Keith and I had a similar experience once when we went up to the city for one of the what's it, the ride that they have up there? Mods and Rockers. And we lost them. I don't know how.
How do you lose 150 people?
We lost them.
I think I stopped to block an intersection for some people that got caught in the back. Because that ride is not well blocked. And by the time I got everybody through and I got back to the front of those people, the ride was just gone.
We lost them.
Sure.
So we're just doing our own ride through the city, and then we're like, let's go home. He's on his police BMW, and I had my cousin with me, and I was on a borrowed sport bike. I can't remember, but I have to say, that was a great ride. Following you and you following me home, I've never ridden like that before with everyone getting the fuck out of the way.
Oh, yeah.
Because I realized it looked like a high-speed police chase.
Sure. Sure.
And, riding with somebody on a police BMW was awesome. Yeah,
I had a heart attack once over Keith's police
a couple of times.
We were going to Utah. We were going to Utah and back in like an hour and a half.
36 hours.
And, for ourselves. Yeah. And we had been riding since like 4:30 in the morning. It was like whatever time, 8, 10. We were heading into Reno. We were on Highway 80. And we're in a group ride. Keith's been leading the whole time, you know, riding for a couple hours. And everybody goes to the left to pass this big rig. And I decided to go around him to the right. Okay? And I'm screaming up around this truck. And I go around the front of him. And I see Keith and that black and white BMW. And I just shut the throttle. And I was like, "Oh, that's Keith. I've been riding with him for like 3 hours. What the hell am I doing?" Of course, that's Keith.
I did a very short, because kilt ride, with four of the riders coming back from the kilt ride, as the person in front, now this is a hyper-competitive group about who's going to be in front. The person in front, wearing his kilt, stands up on the pegs.
Adrian.
And I have never seen a group of people fight for the rear position. And he was on his pegs from when we got on 101 to like past the airport.
Was this Adrian?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm scarred.
Well, on that note, I want to thank everyone for coming and talking with us today, and everyone for listening. Especially shout out to Japan. We hear we got some listeners there.
Ohayo gozaima.
There we go. Hey, if you can reach us at recyclemotorcyclegarage@gmail.com. And I got a little incentive this time. First person to email me with their shirt size and their address gets a free Recycle Garage t-shirt. And yeah, send us an email. We'd like to get feedback. I want to remind you who all is here. It's me, Liza. We got Moti.
Yes.
John.
Uh-huh.
Keith.
Yeah.
Yeah. Justin.
Uh-huh.
And Zoe.
Hey.
Thanks again for coming.
Cool.